I'm Felina Jean, and this is Black Broads Abroad. I'm an international woman of leisure who said peace out to the United States in 2011, and I have not looked back except at this ass, honey. Since then, I've lived on 4 continents, but traveled to over 40 countries. Along my journey, I've come to know some very compelling Black women from all over the world who also said fuck you to their comfort zones. I created this podcast to inspire Black women in the diaspora to take risks and live their very best lives. Well, this week has been eventful, especially with Mercury going retrograde. A lot of wanky travel issues and miscommunication occurred for me this week. And I realized last Sunday night that my visa was set to expire that Monday, the very next day. So I quickly had to scramble and I took a 6-hour bus trip to Gaborone, Botswana. I rented a place of a friend of a friend, and I had so much work to do that I really didn't have the opportunity to explore, aside from the driver taking me to the grocery store and the mall. But my general impressions, it's so clean. Botswana is so clean. It was super developed, a lot more calm than Johannesburg. I don't have to walk around and you don't got to tuck your chain and, hide your iPhone. It was a lot more calm. I'll have to go back under other conditions when I'm not in a rush and I could really, really enjoy the city and what the country has to offer. So the bus going there was super clean, super nice. I guess it was I wouldn't say super nice, but akin to the Bolt buses and Mega buses, probably a step above Mega bus. Definitely not Greyhound caliber, but a Bolt bus, came with Wi-Fi. It was super comfortable. But oh my goodness, so we get to some obscure land border between South Africa and Botswana. And let me tell y'all, this coronavirus, this shit is I don't think we are getting the full scope of the pandemic that this can and probably will eventually become. But this obscure ass land border, not even in the airport, mind you, it had all of these coronavirus signs and it was checking people for fever and stuff. It was this guy on my bus. Oh my God. Everybody was held up after we went through port of entry to get our passport stamped. And people on the bus were what is going on? Well, homeboy had just got back from China. So he was quarantined for a while. And I was oh my goodness, thank God he's not sitting next to me. And speaking of Mercury retrograde and the communication issues it causes, one thing about me is that I'm friendly. Well, kind of. I'm friendly to an extent. I perpetually have resting bitch face, except for when I don't. But needless to say, I met this guy a few weeks ago, not romantic interest, just, a nice guy that was visiting South Africa. And he, he was staying in one of the Airbnbs where I own my flat. And long story short, this was when Kobe passed away, because we went out for a drink and went to a club and it was a buzzkill. So we left. And so that was that. We exchanged numbers and dude has been blowing me up. And you think that the fact that I don't answer any of the phone calls or text messages is indication maybe she's busy, maybe she's not interested. Yo, some people don't get social cues. This nigga popped up on me, I believe 3 times, because the first time he popped up on me, I was who is knocking at my door? Because, I don't be inviting people over to my house like that. And so, yeah, lo and behold, this is a couple of weeks ago, he showed up at my door and I kind of was real thrown off. And he just was I was in the neighborhood. I was I'm busy, I'm working, whatever. So maybe a few days after that, I was in the midst of my standard midday siesta, and I hear a knock on my door, and I'm like, okay, today is not Wednesday. Cindy, the cleaning lady, has the key and she just comes in. So who the fuck is this? I didn't even bother getting up because I was like, this can't be the same nigga. And I just didn't even check. So I'm having like a very like cursory impromptu meeting with a potential client about buying property in South Africa. So I glance through my window and hear this nigga go pull it up again. Like, yo, you cannot be fucking serious right now. So I'm like, I had to go outside and I was like, yo, you cannot pop up at my house. You don't pay nary a bill in this motherfucker. You don't know my last name. I don't know yours. We had one Savannah dry together. I swear, the scene went just like that Friday scene. Remember when Smokey thought he was hooking up with a chick that looked like Janet Jackson and she pull up at the spot? He was like, "You gonna call me?" I was like, "I'm gonna call you. But if you come by, I won't call you, okay? Don't ever, 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 ever come by here, okay?" I mean, luckily, security is included in my condo association fees, but I swiftly told them, like, don't let this nigga in the building. This is my second incident with like super overzealous men in this country. The other one was a minister, and I won't even mention his name. That nigga called my phone 16 times. I'm not even gonna spill the tea on who he is. But anyway, enough of my soapbox rant. Stick around for the show today as I interview Tiffany Anderson, who is the founder of Away to Africa, and she speaks about how she transitioned from her career as an attorney to founding a boutique travel company that curates trips exclusively in Africa for mostly first-time travelers in the United States. But first,
let me tell y'all motherfuckers what happened last week.
A brother in Iowa kidnapped a white woman and forced her to watch the entire 9-hour miniseries of The Roots so that she could understand her racism. According to police, the two had an off relationship for years. It was not mentioned whether it was a romantic one or not, but I'm actually not even mad at the brother. Like, at least he ain't like do anything damaging to her, like beat her or rape her. While it was kind of a funny tactic, I'm doubtful that it worked. It probably did the exact opposite. In rather unfortunate news, Bashar Baraka Jackson, aka Pop Smoke, an up-and-coming rapper from New York, was murdered during a home invasion in his Hollywood Hills home. Four masked men invaded the premises and stole this young man's life. Police are reporting that it does not appear to be a robbery as nothing was stolen from the home. God bless this young man and his family. 20 is far too young to have your life taken from you. Let me just say this as a disclaimer because unfortunately the young man had so-called ties with some Crip gang in New York and this just seems to be a trend with so many New York City rappers and other rappers, i.e. Cardi B, Tekashi 6ix9ine, people claiming LA gang affiliations. And I am not an advocate of gang banging by any means, although I did grow up in that culture. You cannot be a rapper from New York claiming this Crip and Blood shit. Anybody from anywhere claiming it, but especially on that platform, if you're not from the culture, we take that shit seriously in LA. It's entrenched in gang culture. It's generational. And these niggas out here ain't playing with y'all. Just spit your bars and keep it pushing. And as Nip said, be respectful of something that you are not native to. But rest in peace, Bashar, aka Pop Smoke. So the Democratic debates took place this week, and MSNBC switched up the rules and allowed former New York City mayor and billionaire Michael Bloomberg on the debate stage. And baby, let me tell you, out the door, Elizabeth Warren came out and let that chopper spray. In case you missed it, like to hear it, here it go.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
Honestly, of all the contenders, Elizabeth Warren is the most suited of all the contenders to be president. Although I don't think she'll get the nominee. The only two that can galvanize would-be Trump supporters, unfortunately, is Bloomberg and Biden. So I know I have this policy and I just spoke about it of never voting for a white man for anything, but hear me out. I actually may vote for Biden, although I think he's senile and of yesteryear, but if he puts Stacey Abrams on his ticket, he has my vote 100%. He's a finessable white man and I know his kind very well. Stacey Abrams would indubitably be the president, kind of akin to Cheney and Bush. So Stacey Abrams 2020, y'all. Now, Post is reporting that Rwanda's president, Paul Kagame, over the weekend revealed how the country's health minister had been fired over mishandling of coronavirus testing kits. In a stinging rebuke on his ministers, Kagame accused several of them, including the ex-health minister, Diane Gashumba, of lying, carelessness, and indiscipline. Kagame, who was speaking at the National Leaders Retreat, said Gashumba lied to him about the availability of kits to test individuals for the deadly coronavirus. President Kagame said in a statement, "One morning I called one of the leaders and the prime minister about the coronavirus and asked that they examine each one of us ahead of the leaders' retreat. I told them to tell the Minister of Health to ensure this. She responded that we have 3,500 kits and the using of 400 of them to test leaders would seriously deplete the number of kits we have." Kagame went on to reveal that later it was discovered that they did not have the kits as she said and only had enough kits for 95 people and not the 3,500 she had mentioned. The Prime Minister's office on Friday said it had relieved Gashumba of her duties following a series of habitual gross errors and repeated leadership failures. Rwandan President Kagame is praised on the continent as being one of the best presidents that Africa has ever seen. He certainly doesn't have the stain of corruption that many of his contemporaries do on the continent. In other coronavirus news, Al Jazeera is reporting that Iran has shut down schools, universities, and cultural centers as the coronavirus has already claimed the life of 6 Iranians. So far, 28 cases have been confirmed in Iran. The virus has spread to 28 countries and counting, with a spike occurring in South Korea. South Korea reported 128 new cases of the virus last Sunday, bringing the total to 556 and a reported 4 deaths. The news added to the concerns that another Asian country was losing control of the disease and that the window to avert a pandemic is closing. Early Sunday morning, China, where the virus emerged, raised its numbers to 79,936 confirmed cases and 2,442 deaths. Be safe out here, y'all. Like, wash your hands, cover your mouths in the airport, and while you're traveling, just protect your neck. And that's it for...
Let me tell y'all motherfuckers what happened last week.
Until next time. Tiffany Anderson is the founder of A Way to Africa, a licensed attorney and professor who spends the majority of her time on the continent of Africa and in Jamaica. Within the past few years, Tiffany traveled and explored 15 African countries, and her goal is to travel to all 55 African nations. The idea behind A Way to Africa was born after Tiffany was given the wonderful opportunity of studying abroad at the University of Western Cape Law School in Cape Town, South Africa. Upon her return to the States, Tiffany could not stop talking about her engaging experiences in the motherland, encouraging her friends to also take part in discovering the true beauty that wasn't being highlighted elsewhere. 10 years after her first trip to Africa, Tiffany launched A Way to Africa, a platform dedicated to providing an affordable way for individuals to visit Africa and experience the many different countries that make up the rich land that many of us consider home. Tiffany explains what persons would gain by visiting by stating, "Visiting Africa will change your life.
The ability to see and touch ancient holy grounds in Ethiopia or visit slave castles in Ghana and view the terrain of South Africa from the top of Table Mountain is just the beginning of your visit to Africa. It is the views and experiences that keep you in awe, but in the natural way that Africa tugs at your heart that will keep you returning. Away to Africa is a destination management company dedicated to providing safe travels and tours throughout selected countries in Africa, offering personalized small group travel packages for a flat fee, which includes lodging, gourmet traditional food, cultural tours, and an Away to Africa representative who travels on the road with the group 24/7 to ensure a safe, enjoyable experience for all. Welcome, Tiffany.
Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy that we were able to do this interview because we had to reschedule a few times, but alas, here we are. I just want to give just a bit of background on like how we became quasi-acquainted. We're in the same expat women's group for Black women in South Africa. And you've been so gracious in sharing so many wonderful resources with me. And I really appreciate it. Thank you for taking time out of your day.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I love what you're doing as well.
And you said that you always gravitated toward Jamaican culture. And then you discovered about 7 years ago that your maternal and paternal grandparents are from Jamaica. And now you live there part of the year. So that's so serendipitous. Can you expound a bit more about your upbringing?
That is interesting, or I guess you can call it destiny. Mm-hmm. So grew up in, ironically born in Jamaica, Queens, New York. I grew up in New York for some time. I also lived in Atlanta and Florida. I graduated from FAMU, Florida A&M University. And then in high school in South Florida, there's a huge Caribbean population. And I would say throughout high school, even like my first boyfriend was from the Caribbean, I always gravitated to all my friends were from Jamaica, Trinidad, Haiti, just different places throughout the Caribbean. And I always gravitated towards Jamaicans for whatever reason. So I distinctively remember in college at FAMU, they had the CSA, the Caribbean Students Association. And I signed up and they're like, where are you from? And I'm like, Jamaica. Because you had to put a Caribbean on. I had to sneak into CSA on a white lie. And then it's because my grandfather on my mother's side is adopted. So there was never a clear connection to who his parents were until recently. And then my grandfather on my father's side, I've never met him. And so just family stories started coming back, like, yes, you know, he's Jamaican as well. So it's just through sitting down and speaking to family members and just understanding where the roots and, you know, the lineage came from. But I had a talk with a friend of mine, and speaking of this, I'm currently in Kingston now, and we were talking about the direct relationship between Jamaicans and Ghanaians. Mm-hmm. And I have a Jamaican last name, Anderson. It's a colonial name, but you can directly trace to where the Andersons are located or derived from or originate from, and mm-hmm. on the island in Jamaica. So I was talking to my friend, like, I'm going to make it. It is definitely something on my list for 2020 to trace back and see exactly where beyond my grandparents, where as far as I can go, to learning more about who I am. I think it's interesting also with the journey and what I'm doing with the Way to Africa, with guiding people back to the continent, and ultimately they are tracing their roots. And I think I should be a client as well as the president. What I'm practicing, or what I'm saying one should practice, what I'm preaching.
Right.
I should practice what I preach is what I'm saying. So yeah, that discovery about 7 years ago, I'm like, I knew it. No. But it was definitely for a reassuring piece to say, okay, this is just the start to knowing a little bit more about who you are. I would say it was the first link to saying, okay, this is my true identity. Because for some reason, I don't know really how to place it into words, I always felt that it was more of a home than what America presented for me.
That's interesting, because we have some similar synergy in that way, because my grandfather came from Haiti. I'm third generation, so grew up in South Central, but we always heard about my grandfather coming from Haiti to New Orleans, and he was a merchant seaman. And in college, I studied at UWE for a semester, University of West Indies in Kingston. And while I was there, I went on holiday to the Blue Mountains, and I stayed in Nanny Town in like Maroon territory. It was the most familiar place I had ever been in my life. And I remember coming back, and I was talking to, at that time, the oldest living member of my family. And she was like, oh yeah, you know, your grandfather was a Maroon. And I was like, why? How do you tell? Why do they wait so long to tell you about family history? And I was like, that makes perfect sense, because it was so familiar. So yeah, that's interesting. We definitely share that in common. So go ahead.
But you know what's interesting is when you ask why do they take so long to tell us this, is two things I really want to touch on is a lot of Africans and you know, Africans on the continent in the diaspora, our way of sharing history is oral history. And that's how a lot of nations were able to successfully colonize different African nations. And that's because they were able to write it out and to distribute it throughout papers and different content, avenues of content creation, where they're able to say, no, this is what's going on in Africa. This is how King Leopold controlled Congo without stepping foot. He controlled the newspapers. And because there wasn't too many African leaders or African people who stepped up to dispute his claims in writing, his story won. So when we say, why did they take so long to tell us? It's just a tradition of telling history. But I think our generation, with us knowing better and with technology and ability to access information, we should go make it our initiative, take our initiative to go and find out and to talk with our grandparents and to sit down and have these reasonings to learn more of what's going on. Because like having a platform such as you, we now have different forms of communication to put this information out there. So we must, I think, transition in the way that the history is being told to the future generations. And that will begin from taking the oral tradition and putting it in writing or putting it in voice, you know, through podcasts. So I think it's also the responsibility of our generation to grasp these stories before our ancestors or before our grandparents become our ancestors, if that makes sense.
No, that makes absolute sense. So, okay, while you were earning your Juris Doctorate, you had the opportunity to attend university in Cape Town. How did that experience evolve your perspective about Africa? And have you had any expat experiences in any other countries besides Jamaica and South Africa?
Well, I wouldn't consider myself an expat in Jamaica because I consider myself Jamaican now. But going back to your initial question, with traveling to South Africa was my first time. I mean, I traveled to Jamaica prior to going to the continent, but outside of Jamaica and Puerto Rico, it was my first, you know, international trip outside of the Caribbean. And when I arrived, this was prior to Instagram. This is before Africa is as trendy as it is now. This was before the year of return and people even seeing things outside of safaris when Googling, you know, travel to Africa.
Girl.
You know, so prior to, yeah, it sounds so weird, like, oh, this is 2006, but to see where we were at 2006 and where we are now, 2020, so vast, you know, it's a huge difference. So when I arrived in South Africa, as you know, is like Africa 101. They call it the United States of Africa, or because it's so westernized. I lived better there than I did anywhere in life. So here I am arriving into Cape Town, staying at V&A Waterfront as a law student. You know, wow. We had towel warmers in the bathroom and speakers in the ceilings. Like, we lived a posh lifestyle. But aside from how decked out the condo was, we had a backdrop of Table Mountain. You know, you're staying on the marina. And so I just was in awe of how beautiful it was, the standard of living that I was now becoming accustomed to, but most importantly, how welcoming South Africans were to me. You know, they were like, oh, welcome home, Cece. You know, you must be from here. And, you know, just basically reassuring me, like, this is home. It's glad that you made it back here. It wasn't such as, oh, hi, welcome to have you here. It was more of a welcome back. You voyaged back, you know, and it was something that was missing in me that I didn't even know was missing. Imagine, wow, like arriving somewhere and saying, this is something that I needed my entire life and I didn't even know. I'm assuming it would be the same feeling you would have with having a child. Like, this is something you've never experienced, but you never want to do away with that feeling. So we studied abroad with South African students for almost 2 months. And we partied and we became friends and it extended to family. And when it was time to leave, I just cried. I cried and cried and cried on a terrace because I'm like, there was a light that was ignited within me that I cannot turn off. I don't know what I'm going to do to get back here. I don't even know when I'm coming back here, but I belong here. I have to come back here. So that was the reason why I cried, because I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm walking away from an instant love. Like, I fell in love at first sight, and now I must leave this love and figure out how I'm going to get back to it and make it a part of my life. So that was my initial feeling of the continent. It just was amazing. So I went back to the States, and I just started telling everyone that it was a propaganda. Okay. It was a propaganda, and they weren't telling the truth, and the stories on CNN and BBC and, you know, whatever the internet was telling you, it just was not true. That's not the life I experienced. And people started taking me up on my offer. So it's one thing for people to listen, and then it's another thing for people to take you up on your offer, because people romanticize Africa still to this day. People are like, oh yeah, I'm going to get there. I'm going to put it on my bucket list. And then they'll go and fly to like Dubai or Europe. They'll fly over the continent.
Right.
And then place Africa on their bucket list. So I'm just like, you know what? We're going to cater to the people who are ready to travel. Where I'm not going to convince anyone you have to go to Africa. I'm saying, are you ready to go to Africa? Let's go. This is your way.
That's so beautiful. I really appreciate the mission of A Way to Africa. I always say, like, everywhere we go, there we are. So whether we're in Brazil or Baltimore or Brazzaville, as a Jamaican and a Black woman who grew up in the diaspora, did you find that there were vast cultural differences assimilating in African countries?
Definitely. Spending more time there, so it's different because, and I don't want to make a stereotypical comment or generalize everyone by saying this, but Africans look at Americans in a different mindset as opposed to how they look at people from the Caribbean. And I can understand why, because in the Caribbean and different parts of the world, your definition of success, your definition of happiness, your definition of love is different. And the mentality, when you travel into Africa, you must come with an open mind and an open heart, because your standard of living, my story is different of how I was introduced to the continent, but your standard of living in the States is going to be different than your standard of living continent. When we start this conversation, we're like, okay, we hope Wi-Fi gets through. What? Wi-Fi cutting off in the States at home? Like, what is your problem? You're calling like, what's going on? Da, da, da. It's a catastrophe going on because Wi-Fi isn't working. But say, for instance, right now, I live on a hill in Jamaica. The water was out for about a week and a half, so we had to have tanks brought up in order to have the water to take a shower. In America, some people may not even speak that language. Like, what? No water. Like, you go to Africa and it's that you're able to connect into, it's more a relatable or a familiar language you're speaking. So when I'm in Africa and I must do certain things, and it's like, listen, water's running short. When you're doing this, just be mindful of that. Yeah, no problem. I already know. And I keep this in mind when we are creating the itineraries and we're exploring throughout different places with clients. Most of the time, it's the first time leaving the country, let alone going to Africa. So the standards are like, well, we wanted this and we were expecting this. And not all, but sometimes when you have young professionals who have money, you have the ability to purchase things. So you can purchase respect. You can purchase whatever meal it is at whatever time. You come to Jamaica and you try to go to a fast food place, there's nothing fast about the service at all. You must wait in line. I don't care if you have your money or whatever. You come and you expect to, in the States, you can probably get that meal in probably 3 minutes top. That meal, same meal, is going to take you 15 to 20 minutes to get here in Jamaica. And that's a familiar language of Africa as well. So I just think in the sense of how I'm treated when I'm exploring the continent, the only reason why I'm treated differently sometimes is because of my accent. When I walk into a place, people will just start speaking to me. If I'm in South Africa, they're speaking to me in Xhosa, you know, just right away assuming I'm South African. Or when I'm in Ghana, they start speaking to me in Twi, just automatically thinking I'm Ghanaian. So it's my accent that places that invisible border of, oh, you're American. And then I have to say, but actually I'm Jamaican. Then they give me the respect again.
A different respect. Know, that's true. That is so true.
I'm not even going to say it's weird, but it's something that from all walks and all facets of life that we all have to do better on, which is defining who someone is purely by their accent. Every Jadina has an, I forget which song, I think it could be the Tribe song, like every Black person has an accent in a funny way of dancing. Like, and it's so true. It's the only barrier that places us in. And imagine you can't go travel easily from country to country because of your accent and your passport. That prevents you from getting into a place without a visa. So I think it's interesting, but I am treated differently once people hear my accent. But I think also once they see that I'm there for the long end, for the long run, I'm not right. there to just come and capitalize off the content. Like, I'm there, I'm investing my time, my energy, and also, you know, money as well. But I consider myself African. I am African, and when Absolutely. I go there, I have friends, I have family. And I vibe, and I walk around like that's my home as well. So I think it's the mindset of the traveler as well.
A mindset, because I mean, your accent could be one reason, but also I probably reiterate this every episode. Forgive me, but there's such a distinct difference between tourists and travelers, even in the way that Ooh. You carry yourself. Like, you can smell that shit on a tourist. Like, and I find American right. tourists to be the most repugnant, to be honest. So it's probably because you are a traveler and not a tourist that people don't smell that green guy on you when you
exactly. Like, I had one client who recently traveled to Senegal, and she was complaining to me. She said, you know what? I was disappointed, and I don't know why you had us go to a place where the steps, as we were going on a historical walk, the steps were broken off. And I'm like,
girl, bye.
I'm like, Cece, are you seriously complaining about the nature of the steps at a historical, or it was so many steps walking up to the African Renaissance statue. I'm just like, okay. Girl, it is a difference between a traveler and a tourist, you know, and you Huge have to be mindful of who you, now with the company, we must provide services to different people, but travelers and tourists must understand who they are traveling with as well. You know, when you're doing your smaller groups or your girlfriend's groups and things like that, because what one person wants to do and what another person can endure is going to be different from the next. So yeah. Definitely.
I mean, I've had to check my American privilege sometimes because, I mean, you know, the rolling blackouts, even though like I'm in South Africa, it doesn't happen as much as it happens in some other countries. But girl, between the sporadic rolling blackouts and the Wi-Fi, like, I'm like, I have my Wusa moments. I'm not even going to hold you.
But listen, let's be honest. There's no reason for load shedding. I don't care where you're from. Like, load shedding just doesn't, we have to do better as a people. We have to invest in solar panels. We have to understand, okay, if the grid can take up to this capacity, then what needs to be changed? Like when you look at Ghana, I remember when I used to stay in Ghana for months on end, about like 8 years ago, guaranteed 9 a.m. that power is going off and it's not coming back on until 5 p.m. And you, after a couple days, they're turning the power off to conserve it because at this time, most people are at work anyway. And these establishments, like, you know, corporate places, they have generators. So not too many people are at home, so it's okay for us to cut off the grid, you know, in residential areas. And it's just insane. But even like with South Africa, when Global Citizens and Beyonce came, the building that I stayed in, it was a chip. Okay, the power went out all of Joburg. I'm like, okay, are they using
this? It was product? At Hallmark. You say at Hallmark when
Yes,
you're in my neighborhood, girl. We said Beyonce. I know she goes to Marabi when she comes, so that's at Hallmark.
Listen, shout out to Marabi Chantel. But listen, they Hallmark has changed now. They have a generator, but prior to then, oh gosh, the power was out for like a week. And you have to understand when the power goes out in certain places, especially such as Hallmark, again, they don't have this problem anymore, but the flushing of the toilets is connected, the water is connected to the power. So you can't take showers, you can't flush the toilet. So now it's uninhabitable. You cannot stay there, you know? So if your power is tied to the water, that's a totally different thing as well. But let alone outside of that, they have huge load shedding problems in Johannesburg. And it's crazy because you can see the different blocks are in different grids. In Mabuding, the load shedding will be out on the outskirts where it's New Dorfontein. The power is out. You go on Fox Street, power is out. But then the portion of Fox Street where Pata is at, that one street is lit. That one street is lit, but then you go to the street, it's on. So despite where you come from and where you live, no one ever gets accustomed to like, all right, power outage, I'm good. no worries. Like, you know, you get used to it, but it's always a complaint because it's something the government should do better with.
Absolutely. I haven't experienced it for long stretches, thank God. Knock on wood. So, okay, you started away to Africa a few years ago. How many people have you exposed to African tourism?
Oh, that's a good question. When you say African, exposed to African tourism or taken on our tours?
That is two different questions.
Yeah.
Taken on your tours. Exposure is harder to aggregate. How many people have you taken on the tours?
Exactly. So on average, we're doing about 200 to 300 like a year. We're going to increase, definitely. We have a marketing campaign that's going to drop fairly soon where it tells the story of Africa outside of safaris. Similar to the same story that Black Coffee is telling with the Africa is in a jungle. Just exposing the different talents and highlighting the people and, you know, the different avenues and basically how Africa is not just only the future, but Africa is now. So we went to the four corners of the continent. We went to Morocco, Ghana, South Africa, Ethiopia, and shot footage. So we were putting we put together a compilation of the content and we're going to drop it soon. So hopefully, certainly when that drops, then we can increase the numbers. We can gain, you know, we'll have a snowball effect, can go viral, and then we can, hopefully that will bring in more clientele. That's the end goal.
Good. So I see that you recently hosted a trip to Afrochella in Ghana during New Year's Eve, and you have an upcoming trip for the Lamu Yoga Fest in Kenya. And I saw something on your website also about Yacht Week in Seychelles. What I love is that your trips are very expertly and thoughtfully curated, and it repaints a narrative of Africa that has not traditionally been popularized. Can you speak more about some of the upcoming destinations and events you have planned for 2020?
So what we try to do is create itineraries which highlight a festival or some type of event, so it's a build-up. So with our upcoming tour for Kenya, it's our first tour of 2020. It starts on February 26th and then on March 8th. And what we did is we partnered with a reggae artist called Janine, who Janine is not only an amazing artist, Jamaican artist, who she's dropping an album, Notes to Self, around this time as well, but she's also a yoga instructor. So her message of A Note to Self is just telling us to go back to journaling and just like connecting with ourselves, like reminding ourselves of the greatness that we can become and do. So I think the message with her album, with her being a yoga instructor and having that connection to the continent, it was a great addition. So we're traveling throughout Nairobi, Mombasa, Diani, and then ending in Lamu, which is, you know, the coast off of, it's an island off the coast of Kenya, and they have a Lamu Yoga Festival. So we stay at the best accommodation there, which is the Moon Houses, and we do yoga. And you have the option. You can just lime out and lounge out and drink your dawas and relax on the ocean, or you can join in the yoga activities as well. So that's our first one of the year. Afrochella was really dope. Shout out to Abdul and Kenny. I think it's really great what these young African men are doing on the continent, with attracting so many people to a country. Collectively, the country is saying, welcome home, like welcome home to Africa. And then you have this festival which focuses on highlighting African artists. You know, we're always waiting for someone else to highlight our greatness. And so now they're taking it into their hands and doing it themselves. So in 2019, we teamed up with Afrochella and we hosted Laduma Mkosa Africa, who he's a South African high fashion designer, but one of the dopest designers on the continent. So we had a pop-up space with Afrochella and Laduma there, but for 2020, that is our most sought after tour as we speak. So I'm excited to see what they have planned for 2020 going into 2021. We also have a Morocco tour that's approaching in April, which is our Saffron Telasso and Wine Tour, which saffron is an ingredient which is infused to their foods. We go to a saffron farm, and you can it's a long bench, and then it's different pots of different like ingredients. So one is just like a water with argan oil, and then you massage your feet in it. And then you go to the next one, which is like salt. So you scrub your feet down. And the next one is rose petals. And so you just dip in. It's a really relaxing just time, not just at the saffron farm, but we go to a wine vineyard. We have three massages that's included in the tour as well. And it's just getting to travel throughout the south of Morocco, entering Essaouira, which is along the coast. So I personally love that tour because of the massages. That's, you know, you get a facial. you get the scrub, proper scrub down. So I really enjoy the Morocco tour. We do bushfire. We do South Africa's Jazz Festival. I'm actually going to stop and go to Limpopo to do, they have a Jeep challenge, but it travels throughout the province of Limpopo in South Africa with just maybe like 10, 12 Jeeps and people just driving in them and doing different things like four-wheel drives, zip lining, different activities.
That's in March?
That is in March or April. It's April. It's April 1st until I think about the 6th. If you're around, you're more than welcome to join.
I was about to say, I might need to hop on that one. that sounds dope. Yeah, that sounds really dope.
So yeah, we have quite a few. We also do our end of the year tour to South Africa for Afropunk as well. It would be interesting to see who they have on the lineup, especially since there's such a great attention drawn to Ghana with, you know, continuing the year return. Now, what is this year called? Beyond the Return. The Return for 2020. So people are continuing to book for Ghana. So I'll be interested to see what Afropunk has in store for this year. But we have our annual tours there. We go to Zanzibar. So yeah, we go to Benin and Togo. We travel throughout the continent. We're about to introduce our Zimbabwe, Zambia, and Botswana tour as well. I'm traveling to Madagascar soon for that educational tour so we can add that on the site. So I'm excited for 2020. I'm just giving it all in so I can settle down and have my family at the end of the year. Inshallah.
Inshallah. Yes, ma'am. You're doing the Lord's work, let me tell you. So there are a lot of aspiring expats and a growing movement of Black digital nomads that want to enjoy the lifestyle of working remotely. What advice do you have about pursuing and monetizing your talents while you're traveling?
I would say don't quit your first job until you have a great idea of what you're going to do to transition over. Because a lot of people have that, like, oh, I wish I can just get in your suitcase and travel with you. Or, oh, are you looking for help? And they say it like half jokingly. And I'm like, if only you knew the planning that went behind this. I still practiced law when I was starting away to Africa. This is a self-funded, self-made company without any investment. So everything that was made from the company goes right back in. And then not only that, I'm working my legal job as well to fund money for the company. So I think having a well thought out plan is key. And when I mean well thought out, think of options A, B, C, and D if this doesn't work out. And then just put your head to the ground and focus. And then I would say, secondly, right away, reach out to your resources. You'll be amazed to find out just going through your phone book, who knows who. So once people see that you're serious about what you're wanting to do and you're investing the time into growing your idea, then they will want to invest time and resources into you. But you must first invest it into yourself.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I would definitely say, like, have a thorough plan and then just tap into your resources and who you know.
Good advice. What is the biggest lesson that you've learned about stepping out of your comfort zone?
God always has something better for you. And I don't mind being a little bit uncomfortable. I'm the one, I'm in so many atmospheres or environments where I don't even understand the language that's being spoken. And I'm very firm when people try to say, oh, I'm sorry, let's speak English. I'm like, no. I'm here in your country, in your space. I need to learn your language. You shouldn't reform to me as this one English speaking person and everyone else around speaks your native language. Continue speaking in your language and let me see what I can pick on and try to join the conversation. I appreciate the courtesy, but I don't mind being uncomfortable. Actually, being a little bit uncomfortable makes me comfortable because that reassures me that I'm doing something a little bit different and I'm challenging myself, which means I'm growing. You know, I don't mind being the only Black person in the room. I go in and I hold it down as the only Black woman in the room. I'm okay with that, mm-hmm. You know? So and when I say being the only Black person in the room, I'm talking about when traveling different places or in work settings and things like that. I love my people, marry my people, want to be around my people, but and talking in the terms of being uncomfortable, I'm okay with that. So stepping outside of my comfortable zone, something I was used to, I'm okay with that. That's actually one thing I fear. Until I'm retired and I'm like, look, I'm good, I don't want to just kick back and not get excited about a new challenge in life.
Yeah, we certainly have that in common. Comfort makes me uncomfortable. Too much of it.
There you go.
Yeah. It's just like, girl, you got to shake some shit up now. So bearing in mind that this podcast was designed to inspire Black women who are aspiring expats, what advice do you have to them, to those that are thinking about taking the leap and becoming expats, whether that's indefinitely or for a prescribed period of time?
I'm thinking of when I decided to move from the States to Jamaica, and it was ultimately to leave the legal field and start a way to Africa. I looked at it in a simple approach. If it doesn't work out, can I go back? Yes, I can. Will I be able to go back to that job or another within the field? Yes. When you leave that position that you're in, does that opportunity burn down and crumble? If you have the opportunity, just give yourself, what I gave myself was 3 months. I said, I'm going to give myself 3 months. Maybe for others, it would take 6 or 9 months. Give yourself a certain amount of time, have enough savings set aside as well to go ahead and wholeheartedly try it out. And the savings is important because if you go and you move as an expat to another country, and you only have 1 month of savings saved up, or 2 months, but you're staying there for 3 to 6 months, it puts immediate pressure on you to make something happen. So if you're not going for a job, have savings set up. So that pressure of putting money in your pocket doesn't supersede you going out there and experiencing whatever the reason why you are there. Because if you're there, then, you know, God brought you there for a specific reason. See what it is, what's it about. So that would be my advice. Like, just have enough money set aside so you don't put the pressure of moving to a different country and the need to find a job right away.
Great advice. So last question, where can people keep up with A Way to Africa, and where can they follow you on social media?
Everything is A Way to Africa. Our website is A Way to Africa. That's awayto.africa.com. Our Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter is A Way to Africa as well. So you can find us on all platforms with A Way to Africa.
Thank you so much for your time, Tiffany. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it also.
So the officer came back. She said, get your stuff. You about to go. Your fingerprints came back clear. Y'all, I've been running from warrants for almost 10 years, and my fingerprints came back clear on Monday. I don't have a record no more.
Somebody ought to praise him. Come on, praise him. Praise him, praise him, praise him. Praise him. Wait a minute.
Anyone else have a word from the Lord, a testimony of God's goodness?
I have a word from the Lord on today. You know, I was in jail once before, and albeit for just 36 hours, it was then that I discovered that I was not a big G, but rather a lowercase g. I had been gallivanting around the world, passing and being treated like a rich white woman, to the extent I might have thought I was one. Then I got back to the United Snakes of America and was swiftly reminded that I was a nigga again. Good God Almighty. I was involved in an unfortunate incident with an honorary white man who had me fucked up. And one thing led to another, and I blacked out. I can't tell you what did or didn't happen, but I was subsequently hauled off in handcuffs and taken to the sheriff's office in Inglewood, California. When I arrived at the precinct, one of the black lady sheriffs was as nice as she could be, and she could tell that I wasn't the criminal type, so she gave me the game off the top. She said, "Miss Jean, your bail is set at $50,000. Now you can bail out with $5,000 right now, or you could be released on your own recognizance in 36 hours. I advise you just to stay in here and save your money. The charges will most likely be dropped because you have no priors." Then she asked me if I had a wig or a weave, and my honest ass responded in telling her the truth that I had a wig on, and they made me take my wig off for my mugshot. I had on one set of eyelashes and some matted Miss Sealy cornrows underneath my wig. In retrospect, I realized that the black lady sheriff was like trying to get me out. She knew I had a wig on. She knew. So I sat there vacillating when I got in my cell, like, $5,000, 36 hours. $36, idiot. Sitting at jail, damn near about done rocked to death. You know, God had been trying to get my attention for a minute. And at that time, I was just blasting through life, full steam ahead, limited introspection, just go, 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 go. Doing everything my way without real consultation from God. That 36-hour iron vacation gave me some uninterrupted time to reflect, like, about who I really fuck with and who really fucks with me. Getting my money up for sure, because even though I had the 5K to bail out, it would have put a dent in my pocket at the time. So 5K should never hurt my pockets. But I also got to thinking about my mother and the relationship or lack thereof that I have with her. And, you know, most people have very special bonds with their mother, and that's just simply not the case for me. It's like my dad got the umbilical cord. That's who raised me. That's who nurtured me. That's who gave me the game, sugar free. It's not a person in this world that loved me more than my daddy, and that's a fact. So as I'm sitting in jail and reflecting, thankfully in my own cell with his own phone booth, I must have called my daddy like 50-11 times. The first 16 to 24 hours, I took that shit like a G. But then a woman came in there. She went from being suicidal to enraged to crying to yelling, "Bitch, I'ma fuck you up." Oh my God, I think at that moment I broke down. I called my dad, was like, "Yo, go to my bank and get these 5Gs right away." He was like, "Nah, you can do it. You can do it. You ain't gonna get your money back. I've been in this situation before. It's gonna be dismissed." So when he came to see me during visiting hours the next day, I was like distraught, like virtually in tears. And he was like, "Put your G chin up. Don't panic, Atlantic." That's some old LA Crip shit. But you know what? It got me all the way together. And I started thinking about my mom some more, because even though we've had a strained relationship for virtually all of my damn near nearly four decades on this earth, I got back in my cell and had a breakthrough, and I just began to praise God for her, because if she did anything right, she chose Philip Napper as my father, and that's the realest nigga I know. And despite all of her human shortcomings, she taught me how to pray, and she's an impeccably clean woman. So she taught me how to keep a house. We grow in life and we have different dynamics with our parents. You may have your own mommy or daddy issues, whether it's abandonment, contending with familial disagreements, whatever it is. The Bible says, honor your mother and father so your days shall be made long. Hopefully it won't take going to jail to receive your breakthrough. But give thanks for your parentals. After all, they could have aborted you. And if that's the only thing you can thank them for, be grateful for that. You may have a mammy or a paw that massively fucked up. But I encourage you to extend a little grace while also establishing healthy boundaries. After all, we all on this earth trying to figure it out. And that's today's Sunday sermon. God bless.
I'm in no love and faithful.